I was never really into audiobooks. Like, I feel like I just zone out, and then I don't know what's going on anymore. So, I don't think I could do audiobooks very well. For some reason, podcasts I'm okay with, because I think maybe they laugh more, and it's more of, like, people talking. But, like, when it's just someone reading out loud, I I'm gone.
Yeah, I've heard people, I mean, I've heard there's total mixed bag. Some people really love audiobooks. Others, as you mentioned, they either zone out, or there's also the purists who kind of feel like it's not really reading. I guess for nonfiction, I tend to not do audiobooks as much, maybe more in the vein of I really want to engage more with the subject matter. But for fiction stuff, I just go, yeah, either way. As long as the reader is good, as long as they have a good reader, then I'm excited for it.
Well, Jordan, it's 2019. When did that happen?
It's 2019. So I guess Happy New Year.
Yeah, we're a little late on this episode, but you know what? That's because holidays are a thing. So, you know.
That's true. I hope everyone out there had very happy holidays. I said that a couple of times on stream, but hopefully everyone is relaxed, recharged, ready to jump back into whatever it is you're jumping back into.
Yeah, and it's probably next time we do podcasts, one of us probably would have been able to play the demo by then, because I know at least I'll be able to play the demo in late February, so the Anthem demo, I should say.
Late January, you mean?
Oh, is it late January or late February? Oh, wait, it comes out late February, demo is late January. That's it.
Yeah, so 125, something like that. And for people that might still be unclear about that, it is everyone who pre-ordered, correct? Or everyone who pre-ordered the special edition?
I think there's something weird about it where it's like everyone who pre-ordered but I think it depends on the what thing you play on. I'm a bit confused. Also, if you have the Origin service, whatever it is, I think can also do the demo.
Yes. Okay. So I think it's from February 1st to 3rd, it's going to be open to everyone. But I think a week before that, it's going to be open to those who have pre-ordered or those who have Origins paid membership. Mm.
Do you have that, by the way?
I do not. I had it for about a week leading up to Mass Effect Andromeda. I totally just gamed it so that I could play early. and I may likely do that again with Anthem.
I'll definitely do that with Dragon Age probably, but yeah, I'm not doing that for Anthem. I played the beta or whatever it was, the alpha. I'll play the demo, so I'll have my fill before then. But yeah. Anyway, so what's the topic for today? What are we talking about?
We're talking about books, Katie. Yes. We are talking about novels within the Dragon Age and Mass Effect franchises, what they add to the franchise, to the lore, maybe perhaps what they shouldn't add. And just kind of, I guess, general thoughts on Dragon Age novels and Mass Effect novels.
Yep. I think we should also say that, like, I have definitely read all of the Dragon Age novels. You sound like you've read most of them, but it was a while ago.
I've read a few of them. I wouldn't even say most. I've really only read two.
Okay. Well, that's almost half, so it's close enough. I own two of the Mass Effect novels, but I have not actually gotten to read them yet. So I guess this is where we're coming from. You're mostly talking about the Mass Effect stuff. I'm mostly talking about the Dragon Age stuff, and we'll meet in the middle somewhere. I think we all should say, are we going to include spoilers or not for the novels?
Oh, what a good question. Well, maybe we'll try to avoid spoilers just on the face of, like, maybe, you know, some people listening to this haven't ever read the books. Mm-hmm.
So I think what I would like to get out of this is, like, we kind of give a quick overview of, like, this is the basic plot, like what you would read on the back of the novel, and that's about as far as we go into the novels. With that, do we want to start with Mass Effect stuff or Dragon Age stuff first?
Why don't we go ahead and start with Dragon Age first?
Cool. I think one reason I want to talk about the novels is that, like, this was more about the comics, but, like, a question about, like, what's the best order to read them in, and that's being asked all the time. So if you want to, at least as far as Dragon Age goes, I don't know if it's the same way for Mass Effect, the order you want to read them in is the order that they were released. So that's The Stolen Throne and The Calling, which are direct sequels of each other, Asunder and The Masked Empire, which takes place around the same time, but they could actually be read in either or. I think Asunder works a little bit better when it's first. And then Last Flight is last. And those are the five Dragon Age novels. So the Stolen Throne, it kind of follows King
I just want
Emeric.
To cut in really quickly and say, how dare you forget Harden Hightown?
Oh, well, okay. Harden Hightown.
No, it's not an actual. I don't know. Is it? Do you think that it deserves to be included?
No. Okay, well, let's talk about Harden Hightown real quick before we get to the other ones. Harden Hightown, it's like, I almost want to say it's not a novel. You know what I mean? Like, it's more like a coffee table book. So the Harden Hightown book, if you compare it with the rest of the actual Dragon Age books, it is extremely thin, and it's the, I don't know, it's the only one with pictures so far. And most of what is written in there is actually in codex entries that you can find in Dragon Age Inquisition. I would say it's about 50-50 new material to codex entries. Mm-hmm. And like, it's a fun little novel, but it's not even canon to the world. It's technically the book that Varric wrote, so it's right. Like, it's almost like an in-world item that's on your coffee table is how I view it.
Yeah, it's canon fiction within the fiction. Mm-hmm. If anything, it is a book that exists in the Dragon Age universe.
Mm-hmm. So in that regard, I almost like view it as like, I mean, like, it's definitely merchandise, but like less a novel and more like a piece of merchandise. Like,
it's a novelty item. It's basically a novelty item.
Yeah. So like, it is and it isn't a novel. In the world of Thedas, like, if you want to put it in like an order, I guess you would squeeze it in between the Calling and Asunder, because that's kind of when Dragon Age 2 happens and when that book would be released. So.
That's so interesting. Fun fact, Mass Effect actually does the opposite with the first two novels, where it takes the novels, which are in the real world, and puts them into the game as items and references them as historical military books written by author D. Carpician. It does that with Revelation, and I want to say with Retribution as well, where I'll talk about that during the Mass Effect novels, but it basically kind of gives a little summary of what the events were and says it's like a historical military book about those events.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. No, Dragon Age doesn't have any of that. Most of the Dragon Age books are from the viewpoint of just like one or two people. Some of them even like trade protagonists of like, you know, three or four or whatever. And it's just like you looking through the eyes of that person, and it's I don't know. That's about it, really. There's no cute, like, oh, the written record of Briala or Cole or Reese or something like that. So a quick overview of just the book so you kind of know what it is. The Stolen Throne is following King Emeric, and it's his ascension to find his throne during the War of Orlais and Ferelden. You get to see how Loghain kind of was this a grumpy little kid and then grows up into the guy that we all know and love. and the weird romance between them. The Calling follows King Emeric again, but he has his throne. And it's kind of like a mix of him trying to find himself after his family kind of goes through some troubles. I'll make that one vague. And then also trying to help Ferelden by ending some weird things that are going on with the Grey Wardens, and so he just travels into the Deep Road with the Grey Wardens. And those are the only two that are, like, directly sequels to one another. Then you got Asunder, which follows, it's basically the story of Cull and how he came to be, and then it's also really much the story of Wynn and her son kind of coming to terms with one another, because Wynn and her son were separated and they didn't really have a good relationship. So it's kind of them patching things up before, you know, everything explodes in the world of Thedas, because this is also the start of the Mage Templar War. And then the Masked Empire is gives a lot more insight to the quest to Wicked Ice, Wicked Hearts. And you kind of get to see how the Civil War in Orlais started in between Gaspard and Empress Selene, and then also how Briala came into the mix and how she was all involved, as well as kind of an introduction to Illuvians. While The Last Flight is, that one's weird in that it's set kind of in the middle of Inquisition, but in Weishaupt, so you don't really get to see any of the events. But then you also, like, have a flash backwards because the main character is reading a diary of a Grey Warden. And so through her eyes, you get to see what's going on with the Grey Wardens currently, and then reading this book about what happened to make the Griffins extinct. And just all the drama that goes on with that. So, yeah, that's all of the Dragon Age novels. I would say overall it's, if you can only read just a couple, I honestly think Asunder and the Masked Empire probably give the most lore, to the point where I think it really changes how you view Cole and Wicked Ice, Wicked Hearts, to the point, like, I would say it's almost required reading to really understand what's going on in those quests, which we can get to later about if that's fair or not. But that's kind of the basics. So, now, which ones did you read?
So what I have read from the Dragon Age novels is basically just The Calling and Asunder. Mm-hmm. And I honestly don't think I read The Stolen Throne. I think I may even have bought it and not, like, started it but not finished it. And that probably would have been, like, ages ago whenever it came out.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember nothing from The Stolen Throne. And then The Calling and Asunder I read and probably read through fairly quickly.
You don't remember him that well?
No, not really. I just, like, you know, like with The Calling, I'm like, all right, there's some Duncan stuff in there. That's cool. Kind of understand his character. It's nice to see his character more so than what you see him as. He's so much more mature and weathered, so to speak, in Origins.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember liking him, or you weren't that fond of him?
I thought that they were good, and is it The Calling that has the really prolonged dragon fight? Oh, it's a spoiler, sorry.
Well, yeah, that's actually the only one with the dragon, I think, maybe?
I remember reading through that, being both impressed and annoyed, because I was just like, this fight is going on so long, but then also at the same time, it wasn't badly written if you're going to write something that's that long and very... You know, once you're getting into a prolonged action sequence like that without a lot of dialogue, like, you're having to describe a lot of the same things over again, mm-hmm. and make them sound unique. And I thought I thought it was well done. So, yeah, I would say I liked him.
I would even say that the dragon part, like, now that that's out of the bag, the dragon part isn't even the part that annoyed me of that novel. But I would say I like the Calling more than The Stolen Throne by a smidge. Like, I'm currently doing a series on videos going into these, like, in depth, and I think my current order for favorite books is Asunder, The Calling, Stolen Throne, Harden Hightown, and I'm saving Masked Empire and Last Light because I'm rereading them currently till I actually finish those videos. But yeah, I guess out of all of them, at least when I first read them, my favorite was actually The Masked Empire. Mostly because it had a lot to do with, like, kind of elven history and stuff like that, and that's what intrigues me the most.
Mm-hmm.
And least favorite would be Last Flight. Last Flight's interesting because it's actually written by someone who's, like, the other books are either written by David Gator or Patrick Weeks, and then Last Flight is written by Leanne Marcel, I think it's pronounced. Marcelial? I don't know. I'm bad with pronunciations. But, like, she's a fine writer. I don't think it's a bad writing. I just wasn't really fond of the story and how it flip-flops in between narratives. And, like, the main character of, like, the future and the past are kind of similar. And, like, it kind of got confusing who was who, I remember. So I wasn't really fond of that. Which I will say people have said that Last Flight is their favorite by leagues. So I'll have to, I guess, revisit that when I read it. But yeah, I don't know, that was my least favorite out of them so far.
Do you think it's maybe just the fact that the game writers sort of have, whether they mean to or not, they have sort of a tendency to put pacing into sort of game-sized chunks? I'm probably explaining that poorly, but I think that inherently video games have a different type of pacing, and even though I wouldn't say, like, say with the Mass Effect novels, I don't think that they're paced like video games, but I do notice that with, how do I put this? It's more like when Drew Karpyshyn goes to plot out a game, he has something of his style as a novelist helping him do the game. Not necessarily that he tries to write the novels like games, but when he writes a game, he writes it sort of like he would write a novel, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I see what you're getting at. Because at least when I read like the other four books, there is kind of a, oh, you now have a party of a rogue, a warrior, and like a mage and another rogue. Like, this would be a really good video game party. Oh, I can see this being a video game level. There's actually some parts in some of these books where I'm like, I don't really like reading it that well, but this would be a really good level in a video game. Yeah. I totally get that. I don't think that's why I wasn't super into The Last Flight. I think it was more just, I don't know, maybe the story I wasn't into. I will also say, I think it's like, so for the book series on videos that I'm doing, I've tried to split it up into roughly about 100 pages, but I don't want to like cut a chapter in half. So sometimes it'll be a little bit short, a little bit long. And the chapters for... you know, the other four books, they're all kind of like random and zigzags or whatever. But The Last Flight, it pretty much all the chapters have the exact same amount of pages. It's so obvious that this, like, not to diss her because she did a fine job, but like this woman was definitely paid to do this book and like say, okay, we need about 300 pages. And she wrote exactly 300 pages.
Oh, how interesting.
I really don't. I kind of get the feeling maybe she wasn't super into this for whatever reason, because I don't know. Like, it's the shortest book and it's definitely the most precise book, and I don't know if that's just how she writes. Maybe that's her deal. But maybe that's what I'm getting at. Maybe it just didn't feel as Dragon Age-y to me than the others did, and maybe it wasn't as much. I don't want to say passion because I feel like that's rude. But
what I was gonna say, but just the quality. Does the quality bear that out, though, if you're saying that they weren't that into it?
I don't know. I really don't know. I haven't read it in, like, a year or two, so I kind of want to save my complete judgment when I actually reread it, because it's been a while. But, like, I remember just putting it down and going, eh. I kind of feel like this woman was forced to do it. Maybe that was just me projecting, but I just wasn't. Huh. I don't know. I would say
securely your favorites are the ones written by Weeks and Gator.
Yeah, definitely.
That's interesting. That's a good question in and of itself, right? Should the game writers write these books, or should outside authors write these books? It sounds like, I mean, you're giving the The Last Flight author a chance here. You're going to reread it to make sure, but it sounds like you're leaning towards game writers.
Well, I don't think that game writers need to write the books, but I feel like I question if she actually wanted to, or if this was a paycheck. Like, oh man, like, writers definitely need paychecks. They definitely need to do things like this, and I don't want to dissuade that. I wonder if, like, I don't know. Like, it was this a chore, and did that come out into the media? Which, again, I need to reread it before I definitely say so. But yeah, it's I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's certainly possible. I think there's probably strong evidence that has happened before with other game franchises. It definitely happened with at least one of the Halo novels, which I've read a good portion of, at least the earlier Halo novels, and that definitely happened at least with one of them. So there's probably evidence for it. It's probably not unheard of, but that's interesting. Well, at least you're being open-minded. You're giving it another shot.
Yeah. What about the Mass Effect books? Let's talk about those.
The Mass Effect books, so there are, let's see, six of them. Well, I mean, if you want to count the one that we don't talk about, maybe seven.
Let's count the one we don't talk about, because I want to talk about that.
Yeah, so that's the only one I haven't read, ever. And I said, actually, that I would read it at one point, but I've not gotten around to it. So, there are seven novels within the Mass Effect catalog of novels. Four of them are set within the original trilogy time frame. Three of them are set within the Andromeda time frame. So they are Revelation, Ascension, Retribution, Deception, Nexus Uprising, Initiation, and Annihilation. Revelation is a prequel novel, so it is set somewhere around 20 years before the events of Mass Effect 1. Essentially, it really centers around Captain Anderson and Saren. So Saren is basically investigating an attack that took place on a human-like Alliance research facility. And it also follows Kaylee Sanders. So Kaylee Sanders is one of the main characters throughout all of the Drew Karpyshyn novels, all of the original trilogy novels. She works at the facility. I won't go into the details, but something goes wrong there. She ends up on the run, kind of escaping from that. And Saren is trying to find her. He doesn't know it's her. He's trying to find someone related to the attack on this facility. And then Anderson gets sent to investigate because it's an alliance thing, and there's some conflict about what was going on there and who knows what and who should know what. And so that's where sort of the tension between Anderson and Saren kind of comes from. But there's also like this, Anderson is assigned to work with Saren. So you get to learn a lot about Saren as an antagonist. I think he grows a lot more as a villain because of this book, if you read it. I think the space that he's given in one is, I wouldn't call him one note because I think he does progress throughout Mass Effect 1, but this adds a lot of depth to him. So you get to see Anderson's backstory, Saren's backstory, and it starts the groundwork of the relationship between Anderson and Kaylee Sanders. Ascension is set between Mass Effect 1 and 2. It takes place, I think it takes place closer to Mass Effect 1 than Mass Effect 2. Because it's about a year and some change between 1 and 2. Yeah, so I think it's closer to Mass Effect 1. But essentially, this establishes the character of Gillian Grayson. So she becomes like the other major character of the books. So she is a young biotic who's quite gifted as a biotic. But I believe that, and this is where I'm trying to remember this correctly, I don't think that they state explicitly that she's autistic. But she has autistic sort of tendencies or behaviors. And I'm really trying to remember if they actually, and I don't think that they do. I think it's more that she, basically she's certainly functioning, but she does need someone to sort of help care for her. Mm-hmm. And so she ends up being pursued, essentially, you could say, by Cerberus for a variety of different reasons. They're trying to get a hold of her biotic abilities. Her father is also a character, in that, Paul Grayson, and he becomes a character throughout the next two novels. He is sort of estranged from her. He kind of has a checkered past. He's sort of involved with some crime elements, sort of also, he works for a variety of different people doing things that he probably shouldn't, and he's addicted to red sand. And so he's sort of a troubled guy, and that's why his daughter's not with him. Mm-hmm. But he still tries to be a part of her life, etc. Very interesting relationship between them. Very interesting progression for Paul Grayson. I found his character to be tragic and quite interesting. So, you know, you kind of end up rooting for him maybe when you shouldn't because he's not that great of a guy, but you root for him anyway, I felt. Mm-hmm. And also, really important, Mass Effect Ascension establishes the Elusive Man, which is really cool. That's kind of like a pattern, at least in the first two books. Revelation establishes Saren, who's the antagonist of Mass Effect 1. Ascension establishes the Elusive Man, who's the antagonist of Mass Effect 2 and somewhat 3. And also, like, to the topic of, you know, big stuff happening in books, they also set up the Collectors. So the Collectors appear first in Ascension. And you learn about the Collectors, as well as learning a lot more about Cerberus in Ascension. So it's actually pretty rife with information related to 2 and somewhat 3. Mm-hmm. Now here's where I'm spacing. I should remember this. Well, I don't know. Mass Effect Retribution is continuing to follow the events from Ascension. It's set after Mass Effect 2, so it's between 2 and 3. But it follows pretty closely with, I would say, like the themes, plot, and characters from Ascension. It's more of a direct sequel to Ascension than Ascension is to Revelation. So still following Gillian, still following Paul Grayson, Kaylee Sanders, Anderson, that core group of characters is still together. Except now it's sort of focusing on Cerberus's research attempts with Reaper technology. Mm-hmm. So again, that ends up tying into the plot of the game because they're using, you know, they're incorporating Reaper tech in Mass Effect 3. But it's essentially, it follows Paul Grayson a lot more and sort of his efforts to, I guess, help Cerberus in some sense. Also continues to follow, you know, Gillian Grayson and Kaylee Sanders on the run. And it has more of Kai Leng. And I'm trying to remember if Kai Leng was introduced in Ascension. That's terrible because I've read these books twice and I can't remember if he's Ascension and Retribution essentially blur together for me. That's what it is. It's like those books feel like it almost could have been one massive novel because a lot of the same themes of like Gillian being on the run and Paul trying to figure out who he is and whether or not he should be working with Cerberus or not. Like it's the same themes and Anderson trying to help Kaylee Sanders, like those things all continue. And so I can't
quite remember if Kai Lang is only in Retribution or if he maybe starts off in Ascension, but he plays big in Retribution, I know that. So for a lot of folks that don't like Kai Lang and he's just stupid, you know, like cyber ninja or whatever, I always try and point people towards the books if they haven't read them, because he's so much better in Retribution. So much better in Retribution. Really? Yeah, yeah. I feel like he doesn't have the cyber ninja aspect to him. He's basically just like a former N7 who got discharged dishonorably. They go more into his history of sort of why he's a troubled guy, and he's a very ominous figure pursuing them. So that's Retribution. Deception, I don't know, because I haven't read.
That's supposed to be the bad one, right?
That is the one, yeah. So all of the other ones that I described are all written by Drew Karpyshyn, who is best-selling New York Times author with his own fantasy series, Star Wars novels, and he happens to be the lead writer for Mass Effect. But the book Deception was written by a guy named William Dietz, who, with all due respect to Mr. Dietz, I've only ever read two of his books, which were both video game tie-ins. That's probably not fair to him, because maybe his original work is different and better. But the other book I kind of referenced when I said there was a Halo novel that wasn't very good, that was the one that he wrote.
Oh, poor guy.
And it's disowned in the Halo, you know, community for those that read the novels as clearly the worst one, and you really shouldn't even read it. And then the book that he wrote for Mass Effect, Deception, is treated the same way.
Oh, man.
And he gets a lot of work as doing video game tie-in novels still, I think. I think maybe he's... I can't remember the other franchises that he's done it for, but he does it all the time.
Is he like a cheap writer or something? Like, all right, we just got to get something out there. We need filler.
I hate to say it, but like when you were referencing, and you weren't quite saying this about the Last Flight author, you were saying maybe, but I feel like it's probably certainly true in his case. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't seem to research very deeply into the lore, because he made several lore mistakes in that Halo novel. And the rap on Deception, again, I can't say this firsthand, but there was a long document drawn up by the fandom of like 200 and something factual errors that are like lore mistakes. And, you know, like to the point of like glaring ones, like the book is set, you know, not long, let's say a couple of months after the events of Retribution. So Gillian Grayson should be a certain age, and he jumps her forward like 4 or 5 years older with no explanation. What? And it's okay. Just like she just got older somehow. You know, she's like young teen in the first book in Ascension. So she's maybe like mid teens or something by Retribution. And then she's like a young 20 something in Deception. Uh-huh. And it just doesn't make any sense. That much time hasn't passed. And they established that it had that much time hasn't passed. But somehow she just got older, and there's a bunch of mistakes about, you know, the Quarians, the different races, how they work, how biotics work, a bunch of stuff.
I looked him up real quick, and he has 3 for Star Wars, 1 for Mass Effect, StarCraft, Halo, and Hitman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Does he have original novels?
Apparently he does. I think there's a Legion series I think was by him. There's like 12 books in there.
Okay.
Apparently he was in the Marines, which, oh no, he's gonna as the joke is, he's gonna come after us and the Marines. But apparently he writes a lot of military science fiction, and I guess from there's not a lot of information on the books on Wikipedia, but like, you know, there's at least 12 of them, so I guess he's getting some money off of it. So maybe it's one of these, like, his love is this Legion of the Damned series or whatever.
Yeah.
But then he needs money on the side, so he just goes to like video games with some sort of, because he says like, well, I was in the Marine Corps, I have this successful series with the, like, you know, military stuff, and like all pretty much everything but Hitman has some sort of military theme to it, so that's right. Probably how he got the thing. And then
you would think that he would be perfect for a Halo novel, honestly, because Halo leans really heavy into the Marine stuff. That's interesting. Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, maybe we should just give, or at some point you should give his original series a chance. But in any event, the books that I've read from him so far, Not so great. So yeah, Deception is generally skipped by a lot of people. A lot of people just say don't even count it as canon, and just skip right over it. But so for the Andromeda era books, Nexus Uprising is a prequel, so it basically covers what was going down on the Nexus, how you got to the Exiles, what happened with Sloane Kelly. She's probably the main protagonist of that book. Kind of shows you what her path is from being the head of security to being... It doesn't follow her all the way to Kadara, but pretty much all the way to her leaving the Nexus. Mm-hmm. It's not that I didn't like it. I think I enjoyed it because I was excited about Mass Effect Andromeda, and it released on the same day as the game. I think they would have done much better to release it before. I was just sort of reading it a bit at a time while taking a break from playing the game. I thought it was fine. I just think, in all honesty, even the premise of it just feels kind of stretched out. You do get some interesting stuff from Tan and Addison and certainly from Sloane Kelly, but I just kind of read it and went, eh. Like, I guess I got the backstory of what happened on the Nexus, but it doesn't, it's nothing that surprised me. Like, yeah. We knew that the Krogan were tricked somehow. That was referenced in the game pretty early on. So you see that they were tricked. you see that Spender is an asshole. Like, it's just basically all the same stuff that you see in the game, just kind of fleshed out a bit more. And I didn't find Sloane Kelly's character in the book to be all that compelling. I didn't attach to her. I don't know. I just had a problem kind of getting into it. The writing is competent but pedestrian. You know, the prose, okay. The prose itself is never inspiring. It's never, like, astonishingly well written. It just kind of gets you from point A to point B. And it's fine. I hate to give it such a lukewarm review, but I'm like, yeah, it's okay. Right. Initiation I liked quite a bit. Initiation was written by Mac Walters and N.K. Jemisin. Jemisin is very well known as a science fiction writer. She's awarded up to all heck. And it shows. Very, very well written. It follows Cora sort of transitioning into the Initiative, coming from working with, as we all fucking know, the Asari Commandos. It's a whole book about how Cora is an Asari. But that's very small in the beginning. And then it really establishes this relationship between her and Dad Ryder, between her and Alec Ryder, which is really interesting. It's like sort of adversarial, sort of mentor-mentee, sort of father-daughter, but not. Like, it's really interesting. Huh. It's like mentor-mentee, boss-employee, almost father-daughter, but not quite that, and then also kind of rivals in a way. Mm-hmm. Which is really impressive, because Alec's not in a ton of the book. He's only in a few chapters, maybe, but he's really well-written in the book. I actually liked him a lot in the book, to the point where I almost wish he was the protagonist. So, and it also establishes some stuff about Sam. I won't spoil that because I thought it was revealing as to sort of how Sam works and et cetera, et cetera. So that's basically Initiation. And then the most recent one, Annihilation, was written by Catherine Valenti, who is also an established science fiction author. That is basically the storyline of what many people thought was going to be one of the major DLCs, which is what happened with the Asari arc and why it never made it to Andromeda. Well, it's the Asari arc, but it also has Drell, Elcor, Batarian. What did I say before? Did I say Asari?
No, I think you said Drell.
I said, well, it's the Quarian arc. I feel like I said something else. But maybe I did, maybe I didn't. But anyway,
I don't remember.
It's Quarians plus Drell, Elcor, Batarians, Hanar, all of the other mixtures of
all the poor races.
Well, all of the ones that aren't like super cool. Well, let's be real honest. All of the races that have different models. Right?
That's fair. Yeah.
I feel like, in all honesty, if we speculate, if we sort of break the fourth wall, that fucking Hanar arc got lost because they ran out of time.
That's fair. Well, like, they had the staples of the Salarian and the Krogan and the Turian, but yeah, I guess they just said, like, man, we cannot do the Quarian. Which maybe that's not true, because they did have a Quarian model in the game as one of the AIs, right?
Well, I guess, but it doesn't move.
And there you would also have to do both genders, and then you would probably, I don't know if they had already set up that the Quarian is with these other races, and like, well, if they come, like, we can't just say, oh no, this half of the ship exploded. Yeah. That it contained all the Hanar and the Batarians and the Drill.
Yeah, so that, I don't know, maybe that's just, like I said, kind of breaking the fourth wall, but for whatever reason, they do come up with a pretty damn good plot behind what happens with this arc, and I like it. It's mysterious. I wouldn't go so far as calling it a whodunit, but it definitely has that sort of atmosphere of, you know, you're trapped on this arc and something is going wrong. I think it's on the back of the book that it's an illness. It's a pathogen, basically, that's affecting you know, those who are in cryostasis. So there's a crew that wakes up basically periodically for a little bit to kind of check on everything, and then goes back into cryo on a rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And the last rotation before they arrive in Andromeda realizes that this thing has started between the last checkup and this one, and they're now realizing that there's inhabitants in cryo that are starting to die. So it's a mixture of, you know, like I said, your different races. So main characters that are Drell and Corian, Elcor. What I would really say that I took away from it, I love this book quite a bit. What I really say that I took away from it the most was the tightness of the writing, and also like how well Elcor, Hanar, Batarians, Volus, they're depicted so well. Like, I would say Drell and Corians have, you know, have been done pretty well. You've had a Drell squadmate, Corian squadmate. Mm-hmm. You've seen cool Drell and cool Corian. I don't know if we've ever really seen super cool or likable Elcor or Hanar or Volus. Mm-hmm. And this book does them so much justice. Yorick is an Elcor,
mm-hmm.
who is the best fucking Elcor who has ever existed. Who is the fucking coolest Elcor ever. Like, he has so much personality, which you don't expect from an Elcor because of, like, the whole, like, solemn response, you know, like, the way that they talk. For those that are not familiar with mm-hmm. with Mass Effect as much, Elcor communicate through pheromones and, like, very subtle facial expressions that would never be perceivable to other species. So the way that the translation system works is they wouldn't have any intonation when they speak. They would speak in a complete monotone, and the coloring, the anger, the expression of it would come from pheromones and super microscopic facial expression, which you wouldn't see as a human, say. So the translation is always prefaced with like a descriptive statement. And so you think of the Elcor as being very slow and boring, but Yorick is like super expressive. Like there's times where, like, you know, shit is going bad and he's working on something and his preface statement will be like, total fucking panic. it's so hilarious. Like, or it's just like barely contained rage.
That's pretty good.
It's great. And he quotes Shakespeare all the time. Like, if you picked up, his name is Yorick, which is, it's
yeah.
not his real name. And he's got this whole, like, he's melodramatic in the best way. Like, his father was a doctor and wanted him to be a doctor, but all he cared about was, like, plays, and he discovered the human playwright Shakespeare, and he's got all these great theories, like the Shakespeare conspiracy theories about how Shakespeare wasn't a real guy, and, like...
Oh, my God.
He quotes Shakespeare. He's phenomenal. Like, he's snarky and has a short temper, and, like... He panics. It's awesome. I loved Yorick as a character.
Well, now I wish that we could have seen that. That would have been like, that character might have saved Andromeda.
No, I'm telling you, he is so good. Like, he should be a squad mate. I liked Yorick more than I liked any member of the Tempest except maybe Drak. Like,
that's fair.
Yorick is my favorite squad mate in Andromeda, and he's
replace,
not.
Replace BB with Yorick, 2K19.
Oh, just, like, replace Liam with fucking... Like, if somebody can make that model happen in Andromeda, like, I'll volunteer to do the voice acting, I swear.
Will it also have your weird mic spasms?
Yes, it'll have those. We'll say it's like
total
a... It's like
fucking
a,
panic. It's a,
mildly hidden prideful statement, it is a humble brag.
Oh god. Alright, well, okay, was that all the Mass Effect novels?
Yes, that is all of the Mass Effect novels.
Alright, so other than you know, what was it? Deception. That's gonna confuse me because there's also a Dragon Age Deception, but anyway, What was your favorite novel, and which one was the worst minus Deception?
That's a really tough one, because right now Annihilation is so new, and it's, you can probably tell, like, I'm super excited about how good it was because I didn't have any expectations for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew Catherine Valenti was a very good writer by reputation, but I just went into it with no expectations, and I really, really liked it. Like, I really liked it to the point where, unfortunately, the lore aspect of it makes it kind of required that you already know Mass Effect, mm-hmm. but how good she is at creating empathy for the characters, but also showing their flaws, like, it's written with such competency that I feel I could hand it to someone who's never read Mass Effect, and they would enjoy the core of the writing. They would just mm-hmm. be a bit lost, because it really assumes that you already know a lot of the lore stuff. Mm-hmm. So that one is close. It's between that one and probably Ascension for the best books. Revelation, in a lot of ways, I have the most affinity for personally, because it was released before Mass Effect 1 came out. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is such a good strategy. I really think I probably would have liked Nexus Uprising more if they had done that, because Revelation is, it's really the start of the original trilogy, like, truly. And for me, it was, it set up everything. Like, I learned about Asari and Turians and Krogan and everything about the Mass Effect universe first from that book before I played the game. So, like, that was my introduction to the Mass Effect universe, truly. And so for that reason, it's kind of like my personal, like, in my heart, it's my favorite, as corny as that sounds. Mm-hmm. But the best one is probably Ascension overall. And I don't know, maybe Annihilation if it holds up over time.
And the worst?
The least favorite is just Nexus Uprising. It's fine. It just, there's nothing really standout for me in the characters or the plot, and the writing is just, you know, it gets the job done. That's about all I can say.
Okay.
What about,
so here's a question.
For Dragon Age?
Oh, for Dragon Age? Well, Masked Empire is my favorite, I think, and then least favorite would be Last Light. So, yeah. But I will say I really did, like, I love Wynn. I love Wynn so much, and seeing mm-hmm. her again in Asunder was wonderful. Especially, like, I love Wynn a lot, and then I also fell in love with her son, so it was kind of like this, like, oh man, I like both of them, stop fighting, I like you. Stop.
Who doesn't love Wynn?
Apparently her son. that's the whole novel. But it's, I don't know, I like how their relationship progresses, and, like, you kind of understand his point of view on, like, why he doesn't like his mother. Because, like, when you read the book, it, like, at least coming from me, like, I really loved Wynn in Dragon Age Origins, and to see Reese's reaction, like, the first, when he first sees his mother again, his reaction is like, ugh. Like, just, yeah. This woman again. And I was like, wait, what? You don't love your mother? What? I love your mother. What's going on? So it was interesting seeing, like, what his reasoning was and being like, okay, I get you. That's fair. I disagree with you, but that's fair. So, but yeah. So here's a question I wanted to bring up. What do you think it's fair? Well, maybe not fair is the word, but do you think it's, I don't know, what are your feelings on quote-unquote locking important lore into novels and, like, other things you have to pay for outside of the game franchise?
This is a big question, and I think it's a yeah. question that exists across all franchises that do this. Mm-hmm. And I think, even though this is sort of like an answer that straddles the line between both, I think that it really depends on the quality of the book, which is difficult because presumably you expect the quality to be really high every time you pay an author to do something like this, and you never know. Mm-hmm. But when the quality of it is really good, it feels like a joy to have really good material in the books, like, you know, lore changing or franchise changing information in the book that feels significant. Like in Ascension, when you have the collectors, like, that book is better because it's bolstered by the fact that there's major stuff going on in it. You see the Elusive Man, you start to see the organization of Cerberus, and you start to see sort of what the collectors are doing. You feel like you're getting to read something significant. It doesn't feel like a tie-in novel. It doesn't just feel like merchandise or a cash-in. It feels like genuine science fiction that stands on the fact that it's moving forward the world. And then when you come to Mass Effect 2, I felt like I enjoyed Mass Effect 2 in the Collectors and Cerberus even more, because I'm like, oh, okay, like, I really know, you know, who Cerberus is to an extent. I do think it's a little bit unfair if you come in and all you remember of Cerberus from Mass Effect 1 is maybe, like, Admiral Kohoku getting killed and maybe the Corporal Tomb side quest. That reference in Cerberus, and you're like, wait, hold on, Cerberus? Like, yeah, I remember them from the first game. They're, like, bad guys, kind of, like, gray area scientists and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's what I remember.
Yeah, because people forget, like, they're not huge in Mass Effect 1. They're kind of like...
Oh, they're really not, yeah. They're just kind of like, I thought they were, like, some just rogue little group, and, like, we annihilated them during that one quest where you get to kill them all or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, you attack a couple bases, and you're like, okay, Cerberus is done or whatever. So I can see it's a little bit surprising, but at the same time, when I look at Ascension, I think it's that much better because it has really substantial, like, weight to it because it covers major events.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, I don't know. Like, I think I'm torn on it because I like that experience of being able to say, like, I was able to pay the however much money, how much is this book? It was $8.99, and $10.99 in Canadian dollars. I spent $9 to figure out what happens when King Merrick goes into the Deep Roads. Like, and I was grateful, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I put in the time. I put in the money. I found out the secrets that other fans don't know. And I get to hold my head up high and say, look at me. I know the real truth, you peons. Like, it's a little bit braggy, but, like, it is fun to, like, go through the work and, like, trying to, like, discover new information and be rewarded for that. At the same time, I have totally been there, specifically with, like, Skyrim, I guess, because, like, I only played Skyrim, I didn't play anything else, and, like, going into this, I know it doesn't really have that many, like, novels and outside stuff, but, like, I don't know, like, there's a lot of times, like, I feel so lost, and the game's not explaining what's going on, and, like, I feel like I have to... you know, do the other things that, like, I don't even know it exists just to understand this world and the lore. And I know that can be very frustrating for some people.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Elder Scrolls lore is a massive topic all on its own. The shortest version I can give of it is there is essentially an idea that the lore is so big that it cannot be learned in the same way that other franchises have, and it ultimately doesn't matter to playing the games. Yeah. That's their basic approach.
Which sucks, by the way.
it doesn't. I've kind of flip-flopped on that. I used to think that it sucked, and then when I kind of fell down the rabbit hole of Elder Scrolls lore for a few months there, I was like, it's kind of a cool meta concept. I would have to... I don't want to talk about Elder Scrolls lore on a goddamn Bible podcast.
Yeah, that's another thing.
But... okay, can we just also go back to the fact that you said, you peons? What did you say? I'm like, is that going to be the new motto in 2019 for Gilderthalen? Oh. I know everything, you peons.
That's my channel motto in general. That's not 2019. No, I'm kidding.
I support this motto change, Katie.
That's going to be my new banner. I know things, you peons.
But yeah, I get you, right? There's something kind of exciting about knowing ahead of the general game-playing audience. I will say, on the flip side of that, you know, with the Assassin's Creed franchise, which I am a big fan of, you know, they've been throwing some major stuff into the comics for Assassin's Creed, and I was like, okay, well, I happen to like comic books just on their own. And so I am going to purchase and read some of these Assassin's Creed comic book things. They fucking suck. they're not good. I'm so sorry to whoever wrote them and drew them and just the whole deal. They're not good, in my opinion, as someone who likes comics. And so I tried to read through a few of them because it's like these are really essential, especially to Assassin's Creed Origins and Odyssey, and I'm just like, I don't like these. I'm too busy to read something that I don't like. And so now I'm like, I can kind of tell in the quote unquote modern day story of Assassin's Creed. I'm like, yeah, I'm not really sure how we got here. I guess I should have finished reading those comics, but they're not that good. Mm-hmm. And so that's frustrating. So I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, here's another, I guess it's almost the flip side, because I believe this happened with Star Wars, where they had all of these novels and stuff, and then Disney, when they bought out, was like, eh, forget the novels, they're not canon anymore. Didn't that happen? Or am I making that up?
Oh, that happened with the entire Star Wars Extended Universe, so there's, like, beloved novels, like the Thrawn trilogy and all these different things that covered, like, what happened after Return of the Jedi. And that's no longer canon. I mean, that was considered like the continuation of the Star Wars saga. And now it's like, I forget how they reference them now, like Star Wars Legends or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that they wiped out a ton, basically the extended universe entirely.
I guess that's like the ultimate fear of extended universe is like you have the main source of the media, which for Star Wars is movies, but for Mass Effect and Dragon Age is the video games. And then the extended universe is, like, nice, and, like, us fans get to do things, whatever. But at the end of the day, the games can come along and say, well, it didn't happen like that. It happened like this, and that's going to be the truth. That's what they're going to continue off on. And there have been, like, for example, the Masked Empire and Asunder, the timeline doesn't work with the games at all. Like, the years it says, it doesn't work. And that's minor, granted. But, like, I mean, who's, like, they like, The Last Flight, they could easily say, well, that's a spoiler, I guess. But for those of you of Last Flight, there's a big reveal at the end. They could easily say, oh, well, we didn't want to model the big reveal. We didn't want to deal with it. And so it just never happens. Like, oh, you know, the big reveal died at the end. They didn't survive. You know, they could easily do that. And we would have been like, all right, I guess they didn't, like, know, whatever. And then that completely invalidates the entirety of Last Flight. You know, like, they could very easily do that. And which sucks. So it kind of like it almost feels like, I don't know, I like, you want these things to be canon, but so very often, like, they're proven wrong or they're changed in some ways. Like Fiona, which I will say, Fiona is described in two different ways in the Stolen Throne, so that right there kind of is like a little bit strange. But like, Fiona looks different than how she does in both descriptions in the Stolen Throne than she does in the games. So like, oops, I guess it's wrong now. Like, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's almost like they're there, but they're almost not at the same time. And especially since, like, Asunder and the Masked Empire use BioWare canon, which doesn't necessarily, like, Wynn and Liliana, and, like, it mentions King Alistair, I believe, like, those could all be choices that you don't have in your world state. And I'm sure Mass Effect has something similar to that, too. So, like, what, the people tell you, like, oh, well, you just imagine in your world states a little bit differently. Well, then what's the point of the book then? Like, why read that book if it invalidates your world state? I don't know, man. Like, that's a good question.
Yeah, those are good questions. I mean, I guess on the one hand, some of that might even be a good thing in the case of books like Deception, where it's so bad you might just want to say, yeah, we're just going to ignore that one. But also, I don't know, at least with Mass Effect, I feel like they've managed to avoid anything major that would be overridden. I think the comparison with Star Wars is interesting because for a long time, the creator of Star Wars said, I'm not going to make any more movies ever. I made 3 movies and that's it. And so he said, have at it, to all of these authors who wanted to continue the story of Luke Skywalker and all this, et cetera, et cetera. And he still managed to sidestep that when he wanted to make 3 more movies, and he just went the other direction and did a bunch of prequel stuff. And then when Disney bought it, they're like, well, no, we're going to continue the story after Return of the Jedi. And for decades, we thought that was never going to happen. We've always been under the assumption that the games are going to continue to push forward the stories. So I feel like they've been able to be careful about that. Like, no one is taking, you know, like Hawk or the Warden and making them the protagonist of a book. Or the Inquisitor or Shepard. If we knew that Mass Effect was truly completely over, maybe you could do that with Shepard. But even with like the original trilogy effectively being completely done, they still don't do things like that because you just never know. So I kind of feel like BioWare has managed to avoid the exact Star Wars situation, but that doesn't avoid the other thing that you mentioned, which is like King Alistair or, you know, references like that. I'm trying to think about the Mass Effect novels, and I don't think that they have anything exactly like that. Kaylee Sanders finally appeared in the game, in one of the games in Mass Effect 3, in one of the side quests, which was like super exciting. Everybody flipped out. I was so excited in Mass Effect 3 when that happened. And, you know, and she has there's a little reference there between her and Anderson because they share a relationship throughout the books. And that's super satisfying. And other than that, I don't feel like there's any overlap that destroys either one. Like, nothing in the games happens that, like, invalidates the books that I can think of. They even reference Shepard without a gender. I think they say, like, Shepard comes up a couple of times, and then when referencing Shepard, they just say Shepard or they or something.
Man, that's to the credit of the Mass Effect books. The Dragon Age ones, at least Asunder and the Masked Empire, there's like, well, I guess Liliana survives no matter what, so there, I guess there's that. But like, yeah, when she can die in Dragon Age Origins, and then this book essentially says, well, nope. she is very critical to the plot of Asunder, and like, I cannot see if she died in Awaken or a Dragon Age Origins, like how this book would be without her. Like, it's almost like she, no matter what you did in Origins, she survived. That she's alive. Sorry, man.
Yeah.
Your choice is bunk.
Are there things that you feel the books established that got carried over in the games, like very successfully?
How so?
Like, even details. Like, I was trying to think of, like, things that didn't correctly overlap in Mass Effect, but there's things that actually do. Like, I forgot to mention that during Ascension and somewhat Retribution as well, we actually learn a lot more about Quarian culture also. Mm-hmm. While Gillian Grayson is on the run, she goes to the Quarian flotilla. And there's just certain stuff that hadn't quite been in the games yet, because, again, Ascension is set between 1 and 2. And so, like, the procedures, like, the technical procedure of going into the Quarian flotilla or any Quarian ship and asking for a security and a security and a disinfectant team or whatever. Like, you have to make sure you're decontamination and a security team. Like, that's technical, but it's also cultural. Like, you have to do that or you're considered really rude. Mm-hmm. And then, lo and behold, when you go on Tally's loyalty mission in 2 and you get there, and I think you actually have a choice, like a dialogue choice, to just say, like, hey, we're coming on board, or you can ask for security and decontamination. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's so cool to be able to ask for that, and they respond like, oh, good, like, you know the fucking drill here.
Mm-hmm.
That was established in the books. Like, that, I don't know. I just thought that little detail carried over.
I'm trying to think. I mean, there's definitely references to the books, like at least to Asunder and Masked Empire in Dragon Age Inquisition. The Calling and Stolen Throne are really mainly just kind of on their own. Like, there's not a lot of, there are a few, but there's not that many references, at least to Dragon Age Origins. The Calling does set up the architect, so you do get that and a little bit about him, but like, the architect is described much different than he actually is in the games, at least physically appearance. I think like how he acts is pretty similar, but I can't say there's like any that, at least I can really think of right now, like any small detail that like you see later in the game going, oh, that's like the thing you did in the book.
I'm trying to think about like the actual the Calling itself, the Grey Warden's experience. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, I mean, it's definitely given more detail in the book.
Well, I will say the Grey Warden, so there's two books with Grey Wardens, The Calling and The Last Flight. The Last Flight is like the actual Grey Wardens, you know, like we're at Weishaupt, this is the Grey Warden base, mm-hmm. this is daily life. The Calling is really more like a renegade group of wardens who like is following their crazy commander. So it's a little bit different. I will say that The Calling has my favorite character. There's Kel and Hafter. I don't remember them. Mm-hmm. They were great. They're the best. They're the best character in the book series, I think.
I might have to read The Last Flight, because I do quite like wardens and shit. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite aspects of Dragon Age.
I think it's good to read, because it also goes through the second blight? I think it's the second or the third, fourth blight? Fourth blight. It's the fourth blight, because it was Garahel. It goes through like how the fourth blight worked and like how it kind of happened and whatnot. So it's interesting to see like how, like, you know, in Dragon Age Origins, you see the fifth blight go pretty quickly, and like it really wasn't that bad. But then you see the fourth blight, and like how many things just went wrong, and how many terrible things there were. And like, you thought the fifth blight was bad, check out the fourth. So that was kind of interesting.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think we're out of time here. Is there anything else you want to say on novels?
I would just really encourage people to go out and read them, honestly. I'm a bit of a hypocrite on that when it comes to Dragon Age, but I would say, also, I will say this, like, I quite like science fiction more than I like fantasy, which is sort of in general why I lean more Mass Effect. But also, I just think, you know, science fiction novels are fun. And, yeah, I would just say if you're a fan of Mass Effect and you've never read these books, they are really solid science fiction. They're not the best, but Drew Karpyshyn is a competent author, competent novelist all on his own.
Mm-hmm.
He's very, very good. And in particular, you know, Nexus Uprising, it's okay. Initiation, I would say, very, very well written by N.K. Jemisin. Again, very decorated author. And Annihilation, I just really can't recommend enough. Catherine Valenti does a phenomenal job. So yeah, I would just encourage people to go out there and definitely read them.
Mm-hmm. And I would say the same for the Dragon Age novels. Even Last Flight, which is, while my least favorite, I wouldn't say it's a bad novel. I really don't think there's a terrible novel out of the five of them, I'll be honest. But yeah, it, like, there's a lot of good moments in these novels, and each novel has like a couple scenes where like is ingrained in my mind and I think are really moving. And I almost want to say that the Dragon Age novels, much like Dragon Age themselves, the story is fine and good, but what really shines is the character development. So I guess that's what is burned into my memory more than like, you know, little details that went into the games, but more like how the, like the interaction between Merrick and Duncan or Wynn and her son, like that's what I remember because that's kind of what almost Dragon Age is about, is the character interactions.
I mean, you referenced just a second ago, Kel and Hafter, and I mean, no spoilers, but good Lord, the feels. Oh my God, the feels.
Kel and Hafter. Oh, the
I
end
was sitting
part.
There. I know, I was sitting there going like, you son of a bitch.
I look, that one moment, that got me. I was like, oh,
that
no.
got me too. That got me too.
To people who don't know Kellen Hafter, Hafter's a dog. So that should, I should say that.
That's his Mabari and man, a man in his Mabari, man.
Oh man. Yeah.
Go out and read The Calling, people.
Yeah, I would say read The Stolen Throne first because I think it gives a lot of context that you need for The Calling. It's not necessary, like you didn't do it,
and you don't remember it.
But yeah, anyway, okay. So with that, Jordan, where can they find you?
The folks can find me at The Exalted March on YouTube, on Twitter, on Instagram. I do have a Reddit account for The Exalted March. I don't ever use it, but it's there.
Okay. Do you want people to PM you? Is this
one? Yeah, just, you know, if people want to just have their bases covered, I'm out there.
Oh, by the way, I got, this, I don't know why this reminded me, I got like 3 or 4 emails of various Richards for you. I think you...
Oh, I actually got a dick pic, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think we got it. There was a Richard Nixon, and then there was something else, I can't... Whatever, anyway.
Wait, I think I got that's right. I got a shot of Nightwing's butt. It's just a posterior close up. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't like Nightwing's, he's like Dick Grayson or something?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. There's your dick pics. Okay. You can find me at Gilrathon on YouTube and Twitter. And my Reddit is Gilanon. And then I think that's all. I guess I have an Instagram with Gilrathon, but I update that rarely. Anyway, point is, Duresh Jerome.